Following is part four of a talk given by Arden Anderson, the case for nutrient-dense foods, the case against genetically modified foods, made available to you by Hybrix Gardens. Feel free to duplicate and pass this on to friends. Visit us at www.hybrixgardens.com.
Question, what about the pollen off the field? You got a lot of those here. There's some research that just came out of Penn State University. Where did I read it? A month ago. That they were investigating colony collapse disorder in the bees. And they haven't been able to absolutely prove it yet. But what they have observed is that it appears genetically engineered pollen is causing colon cancer in the bees. Because that's what they've observed so far. The pollen is the bees' food. Its food source. Very significant. Very significant problem. And we're seeing more and more allergies as well everywhere. I mean, it's in the news about the epidemic of allergies in children and in people around the world. Significant problem. Significant problem. And it's being spread all over the place. And they just don't care. Not because they're making money. They don't care. It's amazing greed. But as people's mineral system gets lower and lower, they get more and more animalistic. They think like animals, so there's no conscience. So for those people, they're greedy and whatever, it's basically because their mineral levels are too low. And some people, we just need to recycle. And so God pretty well takes care of that, you know, like anything else, you know. The system's going to wear out. From dust to dust. Yes? Question is that if we have a real good diet, we're eating free range animals, organics, and good quality stuff, and we eat, then go outside of that, go to the restaurant and buy things, are we going to be more reactive? Frequently, we are more reactive, depending upon how our overall mineral reserve is. That reaction may take energy away from us, or that reaction may really only be a cleansing process. Because what happens is our body's real sensitive, but it's very effective at cleaning itself as well. And so part of the problem we have with some people is they are so weak, really, that they get multiple chemical sensitivity, for example. They don't tolerate anything out of that because their body's already overloaded. So they get sick when they go outside of the good food. For people who are in pretty good shape, they just get a little upset because the body is going to rapidly clear whatever junk is there. It's going to clear it as fast as it can. May clear it through diarrhea, may clear it through the mucous membranes, whatever it might be. But the thing about it is your net energy isn't down. Yes. And some people are that way. But some people, like the multiple chemical sensitive people, it's not that the bad food is trying to get cleansed, it's that you've really overloaded the body's ability to deal with anything. They're sicker because you've just added more toxicity to the body that it can't deal with. Yes? Yes, sir.
Well, because of the problems with cross-pollination and drift, things like that, do you foresee the future of our growth being in greenhouses only?
Question is do I see that our food production is going to be in greenhouses only because of all the drift and pollen problems? Well, we're going to get more and more of that, absolutely, indoor growing and so on. But the bottom line really is through public demand, we're going to put a stop to this craziness. And the bottom line is that it's not the vote that counts at the ballot box in November. What counts is that vote with a dollar that you spend in the grocery store or the farmer's market or the health food store. That's the one that counts. And as people stop buying those kind of products that they're making money on, for example, stop buying corn and soybeans unless they're organic, and stop buying anything associated with it. So no dairy, no meats or anything that are not organic that have any association with genetically engineered products, And it changes. And people say, oh, we can't do that. I can tell you it already has happened and is happening because there is a number of major manufacturers that have announced we will no longer sell or purchase genetically engineered products. Some of the major dairies have said we'll no longer allow the bovine growth hormone in any of the milk that we purchase. There's some, Gerber actually a number of years ago said that they would no longer purchase any produce that is genetically engineered to put in their baby food. There's a number of major corporations in Europe that will not purchase genetically engineered product. And so, but that's all because of public demand. That's all because of the dollar vote that we cast every day with our food dollar. And it doesn't matter what the politicians say, because it still all comes back to money. What is or isn't supported financially by the consumer really is what it's all about. So at some point in time, we will put a stop to this nonsense. And the thing about it is that there's two ways we approach it. One, we do it by force. And the thing about it is that that doesn't generally work very well. But we can do it by, it's whether you're going to use a carrot or a stick. Okay? What is the carrot for the farmer? Finance, even the greeds, even the guys that are all nothing but greed. So what you do is you show them how they're going to make more money with a carrot than with a stick coming after them. And some of them are just going to go by the wayside, and that's fine. We need them to go by the wayside. But what we have found, for example, and Ruben does a lot of this with his clients as well, and for example, the Schrocks, growing 42-pound oats, the consumers want that kind of product. And so if they go to genetically engineered, they can't sell their product. So what we found is that the farmers that are truly open and good farmers, you show them how they're going to how to make more money without going GMO. And I can personally say this past year, just the summers I did in the wintertime, we dumped probably 10 to 12,000 acres of genetically engineered corn and soybeans that went, got rid of it and went to non-GMO this year. Just because they didn't recognize the problems, the health issues, and one gentleman in particular told me, he says, you know, I've got young children, and he says, this is about their health and well-being. He said, I'm stopping the GMOs. I didn't realize this was such a problem. And he called his seed company and canceled a $75,000 order on genetically engineered seed. And so those kinds of things are happening with farmers that have conscience. With those that don't, we don't really care about, because they're going to go by the wayside, one way or the other, by the school of attrition. And nature has a way of schooling people in very interesting ways. So what's going to happen? But it still comes from the consumer. It comes from this information, and people are getting that information out there.
But in the meantime, all these organic farms that we have now here, can we really call them organic if we have polluted grain on them?
And corn and soybeans is very difficult. I'll tell you, it's very difficult in this country to do corn and soybeans because pollen drift. Absolutely. But let's say that you got a lot of corn and soybeans around you, but you're growing oats or you're growing wheat or something like that.
Or your garden.
That's not going to be such a problem because they're not going to cross-pollinate.
There would be more organizations, organic organizations, testing that or demanding that.
Yeah, that's correct. More and more organic organizations are actually testing, doing genetic testing to see whether or not there is contamination. And unfortunately, corn and soybeans are almost impossible to grow organically unless you have them absolutely, completely pristine areas. Say in the mountains somewhere and you got a valley where there's no other of those crops around. If you can get pristine seed. And so seed saving is very, very important as well, saving pristine seed. And really what we're doing, what we're finding and have found, as we get the Brix readings up, we find that the old heritage varieties outproduce the modern hybrids. So we start going back further and further to the old varieties which are open pollinated, which we can save, and which the farmer then can be truly independent. will outproduce the modern hybrids, but not under deficient mineral systems they won't. Because the modern hybrids have been selected just to produce under a very narrow fertilizer program. And then you have to always come in to rescue them from nature, saying this stuff's not fit to eat. So you have to come in with your war games in order to kill nature. Okay? Yes?
Did I understand correctly that if something cross-pollinates, that crop also contaminates?
That is correct. If you have organic soybeans and you get some cross-pollination from soy that is genetically engineered, your soybeans are contaminated.
The very first year.
There was a one of the first examples of that was, Ruben, how many years ago was it that organic corn chips were rejected from Europe because of that? Was it 8 years ago, something like that? 98, 99. There was a huge scandal because of the organic corn going into corn chips was sent to Europe, and they analyzed it and found out that it had, I don't know, 0.01% or something like that, genetically engineered, was all rejected.
The comments they made, we will watch your children the next 15 years, that will decide if
they want. Yep. So the contamination is there. That's the problem with corn and soybeans. There was a study done a number of years ago. It was Cornell, I think, or one of the universities went down into Mexico, into the mountains, and looked at the native corn, where corn originated from. And they found 22% of the native corn in the mountains was contaminated with a genetic engineered pollen.
That story is our future
includes. 22% of the native corn contaminated. Yes. What is it you'd like me to mention about Monsanto? Bottom line is that...
Now
the thing about it is you have to remember Monsanto is a public company. Public companies are owned by stockholders. What do stockholders want? They want their investments to make money. Number two, who buys Monsanto's product? Farmers do. If farmers refused to buy the product, there wouldn't be a Monsanto issue. So the thing about it is the general public participates in this all the time. And you go to St. Louis, and you talk to people there, there's probably, 25,000 employees or something like that out of Monsanto in that area. Do you think that those workers want anything to happen to Monsanto? Do you think that those workers really care whether or not their children are dying of cancer because of Monsanto? Absolutely not. Oh, but they want a free handout if they can get a free handout on that. So the bottom line is it still comes back to us, the consumer. What are we going to vote with on a daily basis with our dollar? We don't start at the top. This David and Goliath thing, we don't need to do that. You don't start at the top. You go to the grassroots, which is where the money is really generated from. The only reason that Monsanto is a multi-billion dollar company is because of people like you and I buying their products around the world. That's really what it's all about. And so as consumers become educated about what they should or should not purchase, that changes. That changes. And so, just like the American Academy of Preventive Medicine said, avoid all foods associated with genetic engineering, that changes the viability, the profitability of genetically engineered seeds. That's where we've got to go with this. And so, we don't need to get in the battle, so to speak. Because there's one thing about, the rule of battle. For every battle that you have, the other guy is going to try to up the ante. So you have to up the ante. So what you do is you figure out is that you take their legs off under them. And what are the legs in genetic engineering? Money. Where does the money come? Consumers. You and I. directly or indirectly, that's where it comes from. So we have the power to change all that. We have the power to change all of that. But just meetings like this that we're doing.
But first we have to throw something at the
bottom. That is correct. That is correct. And that's why we have to get back to this education as far as how do we grow crops in the field. And that gets back to doing the brick screening. So, as I said, Ruben's going to actually spend a couple days on doing this. And you have some folks here as well that are doing the nutrient-dense farming program. And all I have here is this is just off from Ruben's website on the gardening program, because I just want to bring it up because he's going to talk about that. In the future, but there's some just basic things that we need to make sure that we get in our gardens. Now, many of you probably already have your garden planted for this year, and that's great. Does that mean you can't do anything this year? Absolutely not. You now have the opportunity to do something this year. Some of you have put mineral out already onto the soil, and a lot of people think that all I need to do in a garden is just put a little manure on that and throw seeds out there and I have a good garden. Oh, because it's all natural. Yeah, but how good was the nutrition of the cow that gave you that manure? The manure is no better than the mineralization that went into the cow. So we're going to have to add mineral out into the system. We've got to make sure we get lime out there. We've got to get soft rock out there. We've got to get some humates out there. We've got to get mineral into the system, basic mineral building blocks into that system. Then, number two, now that we have mineral, we've got to get some probiotics into that system. So we need to be adding some inoculants, just like you and I need to put inoculants into our gut. How many of you are familiar with Sally Fallon and the Weston Price Foundation? Excellent. A few of you are. You all need to become familiar with that. She talks a lot about the native cultures making lacto-fermented foods, kimchi and kefir and yogurt and all those kinds of things. You all need to be familiar with that. Why is that so important? Because it's inoculating your digestive system with beneficial microorganisms. And beneficial microorganisms are necessary for digestion. So, you put organic materials out there in the soil. Those organic materials are old dying off roots, their leaves, manure, any of those kinds of materials that go out into that system, you need to be proactive. Now, I realize there's people out there say, oh, no, if you just get the minerals out there, all the good guys will come in. Yeah, right. You know why they say that? Because they don't have guts enough to change their system. Because they don't sell that kind of a product. So it's easy for them to say, oh, well, you don't need those kind of products. Because they don't have it. I got news for you. We don't have time to pussyfoot around anymore. Maybe 50 years ago, before we had so many pesticides out there in the system, before we had so much degeneration of our mineral system, all right, we could depend upon maybe mineral and crop rotation and all that kind of good stuff. We don't have time. We don't have a generation to wait. We've got to turn these things in 3 to 5 years. And the only way you're going to turn this system in 3 to 5 years and get the BRICS readings that we're talking about and get the kind of oats up here that we talked about is if you're doing proactive work with microbiology. You've got to get the good critters in there, so you've got to inoculate. We've got to get good guys in there. So that means we're going to do some inoculants. Those might be packaged inoculants. We may make our own inoculants, but you've got to get them out there into the system. Have to get them out there into the system. Next, once you've got the mineral out there, once you've got the inoculation out there and we've got the crop growing, we want to know what the BRICS readings are in that system. Not only the BRICS readings of the crop we're growing, tomatoes and cucumbers or whatever, what are the BRICS readings of the weeds that are growing? Why is that important? Because what you're going to find out over time is that as you get that mineral system up, the BRICS reading of your crop is going to go up and the BRICS reading of your weeds is going to go down. You're going to get a dichotomy in that system. Weeds and your crop are not the same thing. They're not designed the same. They don't have the same purpose. They do not require the same nutrient mix. I know a lot of you think that they do because you've never seen anything other than that. They do not have the same nutrient need. You check both of those. We can come back, and a lot of things we can do with foliar sprays. Now, again, some of these people say, oh, foliar sprays don't do any good. Yeah, well, there's two reasons why they can't make foliar sprays work. Number one, because they don't know how to use them. haven't figured it out yet. And one of the reasons they haven't figured it out yet, because they don't have the mineralization balance in the system. Number two, because the products they're using aren't working. But that doesn't mean the foliar sprays don't work. So the refractometer is an excellent way to determine whether or not the foliar sprays you're using are working. Because if the Brix readings are not going up, guess what? Those are not the foliar mixes that you need to be using. So if you're foliar spraying, the Brix readings had better be going up on your tomatoes. They better be going up on your celery. They better be going up on your strawberries. So what are we using for foliar sprays? Well, it can be pretty simple. It can be fish and seaweed. However, you got to think about a moment. What is it you want to grow? Now, ladies, I know, well, some of the men like to cook as well, but usually it's the ladies that are doing a lot of the cooking. And ladies, you typically know that if you put something together, you go into the kitchen, you're going to fix supper or whatever it might be, you have in your mind the outcome desire, right? Yes? You don't just kind of go in there randomly and just start throwing things together. Well, let's see what happens. Most of you go out there and you say, I'm going to prepare this casserole tonight. I'm going to prepare this bread. I'm going to prepare this dessert. So you have already in your mind what the outcome is going to be. Now, you still may be following a recipe or whatever, but the bottom line is you have in your mind what the outcome is going to be. And so you do those things necessary to achieve that outcome. Isn't that correct, ladies? If you're going to make key lime pie, you're going to follow a different procedure than if you're making muffins. Yes? Of course. So if you want to grow fruit, versus leaves, do you think you're going to follow the same procedure? Now, unfortunately, most farmers do. And so what happens, most gardeners do. So what happens, some years they get a good crop, and other years they don't get a good crop. And they say, well, that's just the weather. That's just the way God meant it. No. Those who have ears, let them hear. Those who have eyes, let them see. God has given us a brain to use. He's given us eyes to see. He's given us ears to hear. Use them. This is not the same process as this. If you want fruit, this is female. If you want forage, this is male. So when you foliar spray, do you want this to bolt and go to seed, this lettuce? Absolutely not, unless, of course, you're raising lettuce seed, then you do. So the type of fertilization, and particularly the type of foliar sprays you're going to use, are going to be different to keep this male so it doesn't bolt and go to seed versus this tomato. You want to produce fruit. How many of you have ever had years in the garden where you had great vines, wonderful vines. My goodness, those tomatoes are up there 4 or 5 feet. All kinds of watermelon vines. Wow, they really look good. Boy, when the neighbors went by, they just glistened. Wow, aren't they just beautiful? You go out there in the summertime to pick, and what'd you pick? Oh, we got a couple tomatoes. Gee, I just don't understand it. Must have been the weather this year. God just didn't mean for us to have any watermelons. Wrong. What it means is that you didn't have the understanding that you need to switch it from male-dominated nutrition to female. It can be as simple as adding a little vinegar. Simple as adding a little vinegar to your foliar spray. You want to switch those vines out there. They're growing and growing and growing. Gee, they're just not putting any flowers on those tomatoes. We can't get any. Put a little vinegar in some water with a little bit of sugar. Sometimes that alone will cause them to start setting flowers. Blushing flowers and setting fruit. It can be that simple. Now, how do you know how much to put in there? Well, sometimes a little trial and error. What happens if you put too much in there? You're going to burn them. They're going to turn brown. So I suggest you don't spray the whole garden. You experiment a little bit. You take one plant or a half a plant with a little spray bottle and spray it. What happens? How are you going to know? You wait for a day or two. Ah, looks pretty good. Well, let's say I spray that with dilute vinegar water and a little bit of sugar, and 4 or 5 days, I don't see too many more. What are you going to do? Spray it again. And you spray that rascal until it starts setting fruit. And then once it sets fruit, you keep spraying it because you want to keep it growing that fruit. You want to keep it growing that fruit. It can be that simple. Now, if you want to be a little more sophisticated, we can add a little seaweed to that perhaps. We can add a little bit of fish to that mix. We can add maybe some vitamins. We can add some minerals to that mix. The thing about it is, and particularly the wonderful thing about gardening, is that most of you have in the kitchen, literally in the kitchen, all of the materials you need to grow a successful garden once you get it planted. Once you've done your base mineralization program out there, for the rest of the year, most of you have everything in the kitchen necessary to grow a wonderful garden and get the Bricks readings to come up. And that's very simple things, like I said, vinegar, a little bit of sugar perhaps. Sometimes you might have to put out there maybe a little bit of spice. Let's say, you know, you're in transition, so you're getting some insects and whatever. Maybe you're getting a few aphids. Well, a little bit of cinnamon or cinnamon oil goes a long way. Maybe you need to put a little clove in there with them. Maybe you need to put a little bit of garlic in with that foliar spray. Now, I would caution you, you probably don't want to use a lot of garlic close to harvest of your cherries or apples or things like that. Because, you know, that garlic doesn't necessarily mix real well with cherries or peaches or apples. Now, of course, with tomatoes, with cucumbers, those guys say, you know, a little garlic flavoring is not bad. Pre-mixed there. So you got to recognize, you know, ladies particularly understand that. Sometimes a pinch of this is all you need. But boy, if you put two pinches in there, you can't eat it. Yes? What's good for slugs? Typically, diatomaceous earth seems to be pretty good for slugs. Yeah. Diatomaceous earth. Jerry, do you have that here, diatomaceous earth? Yeah. So you can ask them about diatomaceous earth works pretty well for slugs. And sometimes there's other things too. I mean, sometimes garlic and a few things like that. But DE works great for those soft-bodied insects. And it's safe. You know, kids can get in as long as they don't breathe. I don't mean it can be a dust issue, but as far as eating it or whatever, it's not going to hurt them. Okay? Other questions? Yes?
Add a little bit of sugar.
Yeah.
What about the sugar that you're buying out of the store that doesn't have any minerals in it?
What about the sugar you're buying out of the store or whatever? If I'm doing it for a foliar spray, not a problem. Because I'm putting my minerals in there another way. Maybe it's through fish, through humic acid, through other forms. So I'm putting that sugar out there strictly in order to feed more carbohydrate into the equation. Okay? Good question. Right? Yes, sir. Yep. Typically, ants, they're working on tilling the soil. There can be some real geopathic problems while you've got ants. And in those, you may need to get yourself a dowser, like somebody coming in and clear a house, or they're looking for water, whatever, same kind of thing. Sometimes ants are that. And sometimes DE will help to take those away, but typically they're working on things in the soils. We get that soil build up and get the good biology in there, the ants seem to leave. They don't seem to have a big problem with that. It's a transitional organism. Transitional organism. Okay. Probably getting, what is it, past 9 o'clock? I still have a 2-hour drive yet tonight, too, so just a couple more questions. Yeah. What about potato bugs? You know, there's a couple different things you can do with that. One, you got to get the BRICS ratings up. Diatomaceous earth is another thing that you can use. Sometimes you use garlic, carangia oil, some of those kinds of things will help as well, getting rid of them. If you're doing a biodynamic approach, sometimes what they'll do is they'll collect the bugs, take them and burn them, and then take the ash and spray the ash out there. In some cases, that will work. It just depends upon, you know, how poor the potatoes are. The poorer the potatoes, the more difficult it is to get rid of the bugs with those. Yes, ma'am. Yep. About a tablespoon, you said? A teaspoon to a tablespoon of sugar in a gallon of water would probably be about the amount you put in. Yeah. Along with that tablespoon of vinegar. Yes. Yep. I do have, just at least to show you up here, I know they have a couple of them upstairs, that life and energy in agriculture is one on agriculture. I do have science in agriculture, and then Real Medicine, Real Health, which is my medical book. And I do also have, I brought a few of the one-day health seminars, but it's a 2-CD thing, and those are 35. I have a few of those, because I do a one-day medical class health seminar. I did it at Acres last year, and I've done a couple other, in the Midwest as well since. So we have those. I won't be able to stick around too long for questions, because like I said, I've got a 2-hour drive yet to go tonight, so I'll need to get on the road. So I certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here. The important thing, I think, for you all to understand is that in your hands you hold the well-being of your fellow human beings, your children, your family, your neighbors. And God is pretty specific about that. Be not just concerned about yourself, but also be concerned with your neighbor. And so we have to understand food is really our medicine. And ultimately, yes, we're going to use supplements, we're going to use medicinals, you know, all those kinds of things. But ultimately, food is our medicine. But only to the degree that it provides adequate nutrition to our bodies. And we can easily judge that with a refractometer as far as how we're doing. And you're going to start somewhere. The important thing is, whatever you're doing, it needs to be better this year than it was last year. I don't care what the weather is. Name one year where you had exactly the same weather patterns you had the year before. It's not going to happen. We're in the real world here. But so what? If you understand the principles, it's going to be better this year than it was last year, some degree. Yes, you're going to have every year there's going to be a different challenge. Every year there'll be a different challenge. As you get that mineral base and that biology stabilized, stronger and stronger, each year you become less and less susceptible to all these weather things and all these climatic changes and so on. It becomes more fun. It becomes more tasty. And you will not eat as much because you won't need as much, because each tomato, well, each apple will have more mineral per apple, more nutrition per apple in them. Because it should be fun. It is fun. And it should be enjoyable. You should enjoy what you're doing. And the thing about it is that I think it's very important for you to understand that. You notice how some women seem to just have a knack for making foods, for cooks, you know, these wonderful cooks, because they love it. It's about that TLC. It's about putting that heart energy into that process. Same thing, you notice certain farmers or certain people just seem to always have a green thumb. What does that mean? It means their heart is really into it. Where does God reside? In the heart. In the heart. So when we really put our heart into what we're doing, our cup will run us over. So I bid you farewell and good gardening and tasty eating. Thank you.
Arden Anderson's talk makes it crystal clear that food quality and nutrient density play a vital role in keeping us healthy. That's why it's imperative to know where our food is coming from and make sure it comes from a pure source that's not contaminated with pesticides, fungicides, harmful chemicals, and genetically modified seeds. Of course, the very best and most trustworthy source is to grow your own food, and that's our goal here at Hybricks Gardens, to make it easy for you to grow your own nutrition in your own backyard. If you need help locally, you'll be glad to know that Hybricks Gardens has a network of dealers in different parts of the country ready to assist you. Our website is www.hybricksgardens.com or give us a call at 507-235-6909. Thank you for your interest in Hybricks Gardens.